And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom, everybody. Welcome to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. This is Jeremy Gimpel with Ari Abramowitz. We're live from the mountains of Judea as the country right now is in an uproar. So much is going on. Ari, how do you feel?
I feel that too. I feel like it's from one headline, one nation dividing shift to another. You know, last few weeks, it's been all about the United Nations resolution that Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem are all occupied. And that's still, you know, occupying a lot of our thoughts. But then shifting to Elior Azariah, and he shot a terrorist in the head that was lying on the ground, incapacitated. This is the story. And should he be convicted? Should he not be convicted? It's tearing the country apart. On the one hand, it's sort of exciting that we've moved on from the UN thing, this terrible boogeyman of the UN. And
it's already now the next headline.
Yeah, next headline, next story. But I think there's a deeper rift connecting the two. That's the truth.
Yeah, I think the rift that's connecting the two is the upper echelons of Israeli society. Particularly somehow they manifest in the court system here, whether it be the military court, whether it be the Beit Mishpat Elyon, the Supreme Court. It seems as though the lawyers and judges of this country are not only secular and liberal and self-hating, but they are destructive and they are ripping the country apart.
Yeah, and the justification for both of them has been very similar. You know, the Elior Azariah thing, when people are saying, you know, the prime minister has come out, numerous people have come out, and are talking about seriously weighing the idea of giving him clemency, what's it called?
Hanina, a pardon.
A pardon, right. And, you know, and the logic of the other side saying, no, we shouldn't do that is, you know, they say clemency could invite additional international scrutiny into war crime allegations brought against Israel. We'll have to show the world that we investigate ourselves and the world doesn't have to. It's all about the same thing, showing the world. We have to show the world, prove something to the world again and again. That's the same type of logic, that same type of thinking, than actually making decisions based on our own internal moral compass of the strength of being in an autonomous country. You know, we recently had Governor Huckabee here in Israel. Listen to what he said when he said, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'll let him tell you. Listen to this.
There is no explanation for Israel apart from God's unique and personal involvement, not only in the creation of this nation, but also in being able to sustain it. There is no other explanation other than God for how Israel has been able to reassemble, how it's been able to maintain indigenous roots in this land for over 3,000, going on 4,000 years, for how this land has truly seen the dry bones live again and the desert bloom. In the same way, they can give all kinds of explanations for how Israel has won wars it should not have won. But I think for many of us, there's only one explanation. And that is, there is a God. He has chosen this land for His people. And He has kept His hand on this land and His people. And anyone who believes He will not continue to do that will live to regret that false and foolish belief. And this is what John Kerry. So I say to my friends in Israel, be grateful for the wonderful history that you have. Never shy from it. Proclaim it joyfully and proudly, because it is a history that not only explains where you have been, but is the only explanation to explain to the world where you, in fact, will continue to go.
So at least he respects the fact that we are a sovereign nation making our own decisions. I just wish that many of Israel's own politicians would think in those terms rather than the perpetual perpetual, constant refrain. What is the world going to say? Are they going to allow such a thing? We're only existing here at the mercy and the whim of the nations around us.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things that are going on that need to be sort of dissected. One is that Elora Azaria was a soldier. He may not have been mentally so stable. I think that his father said that, you know, he needs to see someone. He's going through a hard time now. And so at that time, perhaps there was a glitch in the army that maybe he should have been inspected. But nonetheless, he was putting his life on the line defending the Jewish people in Hebron. A terrorist came to kill Jews, and this soldier killed that terrorist.
Let me just ask you, so just before moving on that subject, okay. You said there's something about mental instability. Where did you get that report from?
That's what I heard from Tehila, who read the article on Ynet.
Okay, because from what I've heard, there's a good chance that his parents were taking a pragmatic approach, wanted to have that position as a fallback, because that is something that they could use to get their son vindicated.
Perhaps it was pragmatic, perhaps it wasn't. I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist, and I definitely didn't diagnose him.
No, it's not about psychiatry. It's about them saying that so that they can fall back on that and he wouldn't be convicted. It's the pleading insanity and saying, okay, that's what it was.
Well, let's say he's just, I feel like any soldier under these circumstances, that someone is coming to kill you and your friends, and you've now somehow detained him in some way. Any person under such pressure, especially an 18, 19-year-old boy, could snap and make a wrong decision. Now, what should have happened? They should have taken his gun away. They should have said that's illegal according to the army law. You are now banned from military service. You have a mark on your record of cologne. It's like a negative mark. You are out of the army, but you don't send him to prison for manslaughter.
Why even say those things that you just said?
No, because I'll tell you why. Because soldiers have to follow the rules of the army. There are rules in the IDF. He broke those rules. And so he needs to be punished for breaking the rules of the army. He's a soldier. He can't just make up his own laws and his own rules. As a soldier, he needs to follow orders. He broke those orders. But now what's happened is so thrown out of proportion. It's like justice was done. A terrorist came to kill Jews.
Well, first of all, we don't know what the sentence is yet.
Well, we know what the decree is. He has been charged guilty with manslaughter. The maximum sentence for manslaughter is 20 years. Now, I'm not saying he's going to get 20 years, but the fact that we're even discussing such a potential scenario that a soldier killing a terrorist is getting potentially 20 years in prison means that we have to be...
Particularly when an Arab Knesset member was just convicted of cooperating with Hamas, who has killed how many Jews? Thousands of Jews? And also an Arab-Palestinian United Nations worker was caught working with Hamas, and they're getting few months.
And so now here is the real question. Why are these court systems elite doing, making judgments that are so irrational, that are so unjust, that are so unfair? They're not stupid people. They're very intelligent. They're very educated. What is going on, like, beneath the surface? In my opinion, the upper elite echelons that are relatively secular don't believe we belong here. They actually see us as an occupying force. That's really what's in their heart. They don't see themselves as Jews. They see themselves as European, sort of elite Israelis that were founded here 60 years ago. They have no Jewish identity themselves. So if you don't have a Jewish identity, then really you don't really belong here. They themselves don't feel as they belong here. So they don't see the terrorist as a terrorist anymore. That terrorist has a legitimate claim. He's a freedom fighter. He's not a terrorist. Really, in my own heart, I don't really feel like I belong here. He's sort of in the right. He really should be attacking me. Therefore, we shouldn't attack them. And their whole perspective and paradigm is skewed because they themselves don't see themselves as Jews. And what I'm saying is that in a Jewish state founded on the Jewish history and the Jewish heritage and the Jewish God who gave us this land, if you don't see yourself as a Jew, you should not be in any decision-making capacity, because the majority of the people of Israel in the land of Israel see themselves as Jews. Maybe this elite Tel Avivian judge who got his education in Tel Aviv University and the secular liberal education systems here, maybe he doesn't see himself as a Jew, but he can no longer see himself as judge and jury over the Israeli people, because the Israeli people see themselves as Jews. And that's the thing about the Israeli court system that not a lot of Americans understand. There's no jury system here. The judge is the final say. If that particular judge has a particular ideology, that ideology will shine through. And when they, now recently, the member of Knesset, the Minister of Justice, Ayelet Shaked, who's relatively a hawkish Minister of Justice, said she wants to shake up the Supreme Court and bring in new voices to the Supreme Court. The father of the Supreme Court, Aaron Barak, said this. He said, quote, "The Supreme Court is family, and you can't just bring in voices that don't fit in with our family." He actually went on record saying that, meaning they know who they are. They know what they're doing. They don't want it to be a diverse group of people. They want it to reflect their ideology. And now the Jewish people are going to have to say, wait a minute, am I going to put up with this or not? And now, of course, it's all happening, in my opinion, in this week's Torah portion, Vayigash, which means it's time to step up. I know that in just a few hours, there's going to be a rally at Kikar Rabin. I'm waiting for Lavi and Akiva to come home from school. I'm getting them in the car, and we're going to Tel Aviv, and we are now going to start protesting until this upper elite court system is changed, that it reflects the will of the people of Israel.
So I agree that it's about the upper echelons. That's true.
It's about the will of the people coming to fruition.
I want to clarify for a lot of our listeners what you mean when you said, you know, Israelis. People get here, okay, you're saying some are Jews, some are Israelis. Shimon Peres, who's far to the left, who...
Of blessed memory?
Of blessed memory.
Can we say that?
Sure, we could say okay. that. Of course we could say that. He did good things, and he did a lot of really, really bad things also. But he had a very pathological perspective on his Jewish identity. And when he lost the elections in 1996, he said, the Israelis won and the Jews lost.
No, the opposite. The Israelis lost.
I'm sorry, you're right. He said, the Israelis lost and the Jews won. The Jews won this election. Right. The Israelis lost. That's what he said. And that's really the underlying thing. If you want to really understand what this is about, you can also go back to the Book of Kings, when the two nations were divided and the one remained true to the God of Israel and to Judea and to Jerusalem, and the other were more Israelis. You know, and there's that rift that is starting to come together more and more in the country now. And if there's something I see that is an underlying theme that is connecting both of these events, you know, I touched on this last week, Jeremy, but we were talking about the United Nations resolution and what type of damage it's done on the five-pronged attack or whatever it was that I said then. Unity is one of the main things that really hit. Because imagine being a Jew in Judea and Samaria. That's a huge leap for us, right? Being a Jew in Judea and Samaria, a lot of the country looks at the Jews of this region and psychologically in their heads, right or wrong, I believe deeply that they're wrong, they think that it is the Jews of Judea and Samaria that are the major impediment to global love and recognition of the state of Israel.
That is already a minority in Israel at this
point. That's a big minority, but it's still a demographic.
Exists. In what we call the state of Tel Aviv, it exists there.
Exactly. In the state of Tel Aviv, that sort of psychology exists. But the Kerry, in his speech, if you noticed, again and again, he's complimenting Israel's far left, Israel's extreme left, driving that wedge in between the Jewish people in the state of Israel. And not only that, not only the psychological barrier, this resolution in the United Nations made it where any country that purchases or sells or does business with Judea and Samaria, they're violating international law, including Israeli businesses. That means Fox, you know, clothing store or Tnuva Dairy that sell their products in Judea and Samaria, they're violating international law by doing so. So now the world is putting pressure on them and saying, you have to either decide. Are you going to sell your cheese abroad to the entire world and be accepted by all of us, or sell to your brothers in Judea and Samaria? It's one or the other. You have to decide. Constant wedges and wedges. And Russia also, I don't know if you heard this, Jeremy, Russia has called together Fatah and Hamas for reconciliation talks in Russia. They brought them up. What is their interest in reconciling Fatah and Hamas? Well, just contrast it with the fact that they're not aiming to do that among the Jewish people. They're trying to unite our enemies as the entire world is seeking to divide us. And you can know what you're supposed to be doing, what your Achilles heel is, based on what the nations around us are attacking. And that's this week's Torah portion also. It's not super complicated. What had to happen? Judah sold Joseph into slavery. Him and his entire brothers, they sold him into slavery. And the real repentance that was done is when he came back and offered to replace himself in a lifetime of servitude in place of Benjamin. To act like real brothers. And that's what we need to do right now. We cannot let the world divide us, and that's from our side also. No matter how crazy the Jews in the state of Tel Aviv are and how much they seem to turn against us, we have to stand united with them and love them, no matter how pathologically ill they are in their turning against the Jews of Judea and Samaria.
Can I take the conversation in a very esoteric spiritual direction?
Yeah, do it.
The question that I've been thinking about is there any other country in the world that the international community meddles with more, feels more invested in, feels more like they need to say something about their policy internally, externally? There is no other country in the world. There's just nothing. There's nothing that's even close in the runnings to Israel. There's this little country in the middle of the Middle East that the entire world is constantly meddling with. Putin is trying to bring Hamas and the Fatah together. Donald Trump is inviting Netanyahu to the inauguration. The United Nations are constantly passing resolutions. Everyone is constantly investing and involved in what it means. And people are funding, left-wing organizations and Arab organizations. And everyone has their hand in Israel. And I'm wondering, what are the spiritual underpinnings here? What is going on? It's so peculiar to not see that Israel is a nation like no other nation. It strengthens my faith very much just recognizing that. And I feel like on some internal spiritual level, everyone knows that ultimately, Beiti Beit Tefila Ikare LeKol HaAmim. Somehow this place will be a house of prayer for all nations. And somehow internally, even if it comes out skewed and wrong and even evil, every nation knows in the depths of their soul that somehow Israel is actually a house of prayer for them. And it's like pulling them and connecting them. And on the way they get skewed and eventually even will turn on Israel. But the fact that they have some sort of soul connection, pulling them, compelling them to constantly be involved in Israel is truly a miracle of God.
It is a miracle. It's counterintuitive. It doesn't make any sense. And that is part of the explanation of why the leftist Jews in Tel Aviv, in my opinion, are so crazy. Because they have little choice. They see this irrational hatred against the Jewish people, and it has to be either something we're doing to cause it, or something ma'al hateva, supernatural, that is divorced from the natural order of things. So if they don't believe in this higher power, then they have to opt for there's something that we've done to do it. But I just heard this speech. I listened to it a couple times. I was so moved by it. Listen to the explanation that Huckabee gives as to why the world is hating us.
I would say to my friends in Israel, the world doesn't hate you because of where you are. They hate you because of who you are. And they hate you because of whose you are. And I want to be very clear to say, as an outsider, they're not going to hate you less if you give in to their demands.
So
the idea that somehow Israel can make everyone love them by giving in to their demands is nonsense. Because the hate that is expressed toward Israel is not political. It ultimately is spiritual, even if the haters understand it or not. This is your homeland. So to those who would believe that there should be a, quote, two-state solution, just reminder, a two-state solution is what diplomats propose to keep themselves busy rather than facing the reality that trying to split up Yerushalayim is really like asking Solomon to cut the baby in half. Solomon knew better, and we should as well. Why has Israel been effective and successful? I believe it's because at your roots and foundation, there is the faith that you were here by God's hand and not your own. If you keep that, I believe God's blessing is so enormous that no hand will ever be able to come against you. I truly believe that. And believe, as many of my fellow Christians in America do, that those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. I would tell anybody in the world, say what you will about Israel, but I'd never bet against her. Thank you very much.
That is interesting. I really appreciate Mike Huckabee, and he's just a constant advocate for Israel. And I think that, you know, everyone now around the world that feels a stake in Israel, that feels connected to Israel, whether they be Jew or non-Jew, I think that the real question now is, as we read this week's Torah portion, this is the most messianic Torah portion, because it's like this one moment that happens where Joseph is sold into slavery, Judah is like off on his own. He's left the Jewish people and decided he's going to assimilate into the nations. And then the family is falling apart, and Jacob loses his Ruach HaKodesh. He loses his real connection with God because he just falls into a sadness that he's not able to recover from. And there's now a famine, and now Benjamin is going to be thrown into prison. It's just like the worst of the worst of the worst, the challenge after challenge. And then in one moment, it's like Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avi Chai. And in one moment, it's like, Hakol Hayale Tova. It was all really for the best. But here's the key to this week's Torah portion. What did it take? It took a Vayigash moment. It took a moment for Yehuda to step up. That's what it means, Vayigash. And he approached and he stepped up. In fact, the word Vayigash appears three times in Tanakh in very important places. And it's those three times that at the beginning of the Amidah prayer, Jews take three steps forward, bow, and begin their morning, afternoon, and evening prayers. And those three steps correspond to these three Vayigash moments. And I'm not getting into all three of them right now, but
I want to know what they are. Do you not know offhand?
Oh, I do know offhand.
So tell me.
First Vayigash moment is when Avraham steps up to intercede on behalf of Sodom. Vayigash Avraham to God. The second one is with Yehuda. He is Vayigash Yehuda on behalf of his brother. And the last one is Eliyahu Hanavi. It says Vayigash Eliyahu, and he then steps up for the Jewish people as they're in Carmel, and all of that wonderful story happened there. Now, what is that Vayigash moment? The question all of us need to ask is, how are we stepping up right now? How are we individually stepping up? How are we nationally stepping up? And how are we, if we're outside of Israel, internationally stepping up? Because it's that Vayigash moment that will give birth to the Messianic moment. But now it's upon us to be the Nachshon, to be the prince of the tribe of Judah that jumps into the water first. It needs that moment of we have to step up. And I've divided the step up on a national level into about five different categories, and I'm sure you could add more. To me, number one, it's time for us to defund the UN. Netanyahu has done that. It's time for us to immediately annex Maale Adumim. Bills are being passed to annex the first part of Judea and Samaria. Right after Maale Adumim, sovereignty over all of Judea and Samaria. Netanyahu just now called and said, from now on, every Hamas body will no longer be returned to the Hamas. Israel will deal with the body as Israel sees fit. And then the last, it's time to take apart the court systems and make a democracy here that will reflect the will of the people. That's Israel stepping up internationally, internally, against our enemies inside, against our enemies outside. That is what the Jews need to do. And now, that would be marvelous if we could do it. And I feel like now everyone on their own front needs to ask themselves, what are you doing to step up? This is the messianic moment we've been waiting for. Ari and I feel like we've like thrown our whole lives where? Onto the tip of the spear of Judea. And we're building this fortification, and we've invested all of everything that we have, all of our time, all of our efforts, all of our resources, everything to build this up. And I really feel like in some ways we're offering an incredible opportunity because it's a place that allows everyone from every background to build it up, to build up what will one day, I believe, be a monument of what was happening in the times when the world was coming against Israel.
I sort of see it like
Israel.
An embassy for Judea and Samaria.
And it, we're allowing,
I mean, if you see it in person, it just really, it has that sort of official castle-like, not an embassy from our times, but an embassy from like biblical times.
Yeah, it's just, it's such a dream there because it's like, looks like, when people come there, they're like, how old is this building? Because it looks like ancient ruins. But they're in
fact, just went yesterday to Ir David, the city of David, and there were elements of it that look very similar.
Very similar.
But it's coming out of the ground, not going into it.
And so what's so beautiful, Tehillah was just telling me this yesterday. They say, Jeremy, do you understand what you're doing? We had a group of Holland Torah observant Gentiles, I guess that's the name I'll call them for this point, come out to our center, and they spent the whole day planting olive trees. And they said, you know, we want to root ourselves here in this land. And this olive tree is going to be here for hundreds of years. And I've now made my mark and my imprint on the land. And I was thinking that is, Tila was like, you know, you're giving these people such an opportunity to not just come to Israel and visit the sites and, you know, see different places, but to participate in building up this fortification embassy center that will educate the world in the heart of the most contested area in Judea. It's just marvelous. And so all of you that want to step up with us, when you come to Israel, come. Just coming there is stepping up. Just getting on the bus and going into Judea and then planting a tree, walking the land, praying with us.
You know,
there.
There's I've brought so many of my family and friends, whoever comes here to Israel, whoever's here, I bring them out there. They tell me unfailingly that it is one of the great highlights of their entire trip here, of all their time here.
I mean, I go there every single day and it is always the best part of my day. Period. Yeah. It is always
when I leave it has this dreamlike essence to it. But I just want to say, Jeremy, you know, thinking about what Israel really needs right now. And yesterday we spent time in the city of David. Well, what is the real chidush, the real power and energy that David brought to the scene, particularly at the very beginning, but throughout his entire life? And that's when he went to bring his brothers some rations or whatever, and then he sees Goliath there. And the soldiers, everybody's saying he's taunting the armies of Israel. And David constantly reframes it. And he says he's taunting the armies of the living God of Israel. He's constantly, he understands that when people come against Israel and the Jewish people today, it's not Israel and the Jewish people they're coming against. It's the God of Israel that they're coming against. And that's why I really loved what Huckabee said in the Knesset yesterday so much, because he said that. He said, it's not who you are, it's whose you are. Mm. It's whose you are. And that was so powerful and so true. And that's what King David understood. And he always reframed it to the Jewish people, that we are God's nation that represent God. And hence, when normally you have a low self-esteem, people taunt you and mock you, you let it slide. Because it's just you and you don't hold yourself in such high regard either. But when you understand that you are the army of the living God of Israel, you don't let it slide because it's not about you. It's about God.
I want to say something that's really on my heart. And I'm cautious saying this because there's so many whack jobs out there. I don't know what else to say. They're just like cuckoo Riku people, and I don't want to be branded as one of them. So with that caveat, I'm just going to say the cuckoo Riku thing that may sound cuckoo Riku, but really with just an honest glance at reality and an honest glance at the Tanakh, an honest glance at history and where we are today, here's the reality. The book of Daniel has very peculiar Hebrew, and it talks about 777s. It's like whatever English translation you have, you can't understand it because the Hebrew is ununderstandable. So whatever you think you understand, you don't understand because in the Hebrew, it's not understandable. It's simply very confusing. But clearly, Daniel is pointing us to the number seven. Is it a coincidence that all of the nations are gathering together right now on 7 times 7, 49 years since the reestablishment of Jerusalem and the reunification of our capital? Folks, the 50th year, the Hayovel, the Jubilee, the end of the Shemitah cycles of 7777. Seven sevens are coming up. The 50th year is here. And now I'm just telling you, this is your time to shine and have a Vayigash moment. And if you can come to Israel for Yom Yerushalayim this year, you will not regret it. And if you can't, Ari and I are going to be broadcasting live whatever's going on in Jerusalem, what's happening in Judea. We are going to be broadcasting it live on this network. And if you want to get the feed, all you have to do is email info@thelandofisrael.com, and we will make sure that you are plugged in directly to that live feed, because I think big things are going down this Yom Yerushalayim. We're going to be broadcasting it live. That is where Hashem has positioned us right now. We're going to be at the tip of the spear in Judea. We're going to be in the heart of Jerusalem. And I'm saying, if you can get here in person, do it. But if you can't, you have to already now get ready to participate. Help us build it, watch it, be a part of it. This is your chance. And if you come to Israel, do not miss out on the opportunity of being a part of building up this headquarters. You will not regret it. Folks, this is Ari and Jeremy. It's Israel Inspired. But before I say goodbye, I just want to say one more thought. Is that okay, Ari?
Yeah, I forgive you, man.
I appreciate you. I just want to say one more thought. I have one thought on my heart that I really wanted to share.
Yeah.
Because we had a show with Shlomo Katz, which was just awesome. And if you haven't heard it yet, I really encourage you to listen to that show, The Soul of Israel on Parashat Vayigash. And Ari posed a deep question that I've been sort of swirling around in my head for a while now. And in that show, he asked, listen, Yaakov was such a righteous man. How could it be that he hit such a low point in his faith journey that he lost that Ruach HaKodesh?
For 22 years.
And I've been thinking a lot about that. And there's an incredible ancient Jewish mystical understanding of the patriarchs of Israel. And in Hebrew, we would say, Ma'ase avot siman labanim, that the actions of our fathers are really signs for their children. Now, how do I understand that? What does that mean, a sign? Let's interpret the word siman right now as like simanei derech, as road marks, as a map, as signs in a map. So really the Torah, as it's giving us the story of our patriarchs and matriarchs, it's giving us a spiritual map. It's almost as if our avot were living this symbolic life that represents spiritual journeys within the people of Israel. And now we can look at all of those maps from Judah, who said, I'm out. I'm leaving Judaism. I want nothing to do with it. He became either an atheist or an idolater. And then now he comes back and reunites with the people of Israel, reunites with the God of Israel. I find it pretty awesome that Mark Zuckerberg, who was a well-known atheist, just now in this Parsha, as Yehuda comes back into the fold, who became a total atheist. He married a woman very similar to Yehuda's wife, a total like non-Jew, removed. I think she's a Buddhist, like not at all connected to our Semitic heritage, to our Torah heritage. He was out. And just recently he came out saying, I want you to know, I'm back. I think God is a good thing. I think religion is a good thing. And he had like, there's a map here for a certain kind of spiritual journey that people are on, that Yehuda left the fold and then came back. Now, Yaakov, there are some people that just go through hard times. And to have Ruach HaKodesh, you have to be at a level of simcha. You have to be happy. But there's sometimes tragedies that hit that just knock you down. And it's okay. It's okay to be knocked down. And that's a map that we have, that Yaakov is considered like the father of the nation of Israel. And he lived a hard, challenging life, because a lot of us, when I scratch under the surface of almost every person that I've ever met, there is a novel of epic proportions of the life story that they are living. The challenges that almost everyone I know lives through. Everyone has this Yaakov Avinu in them. And we have his story to remind us, hey, if we feel a little bit knocked down, if we feel a little bit disconnected, that's okay. That's a part of the journey. And now the question is, can we have that Vayigash moment and bring it all back full circle? Can we have that moment? And I want to give everyone a bracha and give myself a bracha that we should have the faith and the courage to step up in these days in our personal lives for Israel's sake, for the people of Israel's sake, for the land of Israel's sake. You know, the Land of Israel Network is more than a media network. It is actually a network of people all around the world, from Australia to Venezuela. All over the world, there is a movement of people that are coming together and they're joining this battle for Judea, for Jerusalem. And we're just thrilled to be one cog in this awesome movement. Folks, thank you for joining us today. This is Ari and Jeremy signing out. We will see you again next week. By the way, we've put up some awesome videos on our Facebook page, constant updates. So get onto Facebook and check that out. Or better than Facebook, really, I would encourage you to get off of Facebook and join WhatsApp. You'll save a lot of time and you'll really only look at what you want to look at. If you want to join our WhatsApp group, just email me and say, hey, I want to join your WhatsApp group. It's growing all the time and it's beautiful and it's awesome and it's an immediate. And I've really developed some really awesome relationships with our WhatsApp group. Just constantly, you know, connecting
even
back and forth.
WhatsApp, email.
Email's good also.
Join the email group too.
Email group too. Jeremy at
even
the Land of
better
Israel.
Better than email, smoke signals. You want a smoke signal? We have a fire going all the time.
Folks, this is Ari and Jeremy. Shabbat Shalom.
Have you ever planted a grapevine? What if the grapevine happened to be in the Land of Israel? Not only that, but if you were a Christian planting this grapevine in the mountains of Israel, you would be fulfilling prophecy that Isaiah and Jeremiah foretold more than 3,000 years ago. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to fulfill prophecy on the mountains of Israel by joining us this harvest. Go to Hayuvel.com, that's HAYOVEL.com for more information.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4 bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself. And I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff, will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.